You're listening to the OneOfUs.net podcast network.
Welcome to the Screamcast, episode 145. I am Sean DeRager, and with me is Brad Henderson.
Hey.
Also joining us is the lovely Stephanie Crawford.
Hello, children.
Today, we are wrapping up Brad's trip to Fantastic Fest. Not wrapping up. He will tell all about his trip to Austin, Texas, and the films that he watched, and all the everything else that entails all of that. First, we need to direct you guys to the website, because Stephanie, you and Mike Delaney have been doing these things called Puff Pieces. You've done a couple write-ups, you and him together, correct?
Yes.
If you just let everyone know like what that's all about, because Mike dropped me a line about that, and I was like, hell yeah, we'll post those on the site.
Yeah, it was the Philadelphia Unnamed Film Festival. It was the second one they did, and it was pretty great. I saw a lot of unusual films, a lot of great short films. We have two of those up there. We have Imitation Girl, which was probably my favorite. And we also have a review of Charismata, which is a British thriller with kind of a satanic twist. Mm. So, yeah, if you want to go over there, we have all the links and we have information. And I hope it goes on for a long time because it's a really kind of punk rock, unusual little film festival up there in Philadelphia. And it was a lot of fun.
Awesome. Very cool. Well, Brad is with us today to, like I said, tell us about his trip to Fantastic Fest and everything that goes along with that. A lot of stuff all wrapped into that. I know that I tweeted out when you were down there that I was like, we're going to focus on the films and everything. That's all we want to focus on because it would do, you know, I wanted to make sure we're talking about the filmmakers and the films, but, you know, as with Fantastic Fest and all the stuff that goes along with it, there's, you know, everyone had been wanting to hear reports on what it was like there, what the feeling was like, what people were talking about. So that's all going to get kind of wrapped into this conversation, I believe. So I know some people were wanting us just to focus on films. I'm like, in this case, it's probably impossible. So Brad, I'm going to turn it over to you and for your report, man.
Hey, Sean.
Hey, Brad.
Steph. Hey, man.
This was my, eighth Fantastic Fest, wow. Since 2010 I've been going. So it is, for me, you know, historically speaking, it's one of my favorite times of the year. It's a time that I can go see great films and hang out with some of my best friends, have some good food. So I wait, you know, a year, almost count down for the days. As soon as it's ended, I start counting down again, just because it's just a great festival. In order to kind of segue into the movies, there was a lot of people that asked me if I was still going to go after the events and the light was shed on kind of the Draft House, you know, kind of their little business thing with Faraci, as everybody knows. Long story short, Faraci assaulted somebody, has numerous accounts of just shady behavior in general as well. So it's just not that. That's, I think, that a thing that people were taking to heart, which they should. And a lot of people didn't understand because it's like, oh, is this one-time thing? No, Farachi is a big personality at Fantastic Fest. I'm not going to say anything negative about the guy because I'm not here to trash anybody. But it's just he's a very it's almost there's a vile personality there. And I've always steered clear of it just because I've had one run in with Farachi and it kind of soiled all of that very, very quickly. And it was my early years in Fantastic Fest. There was no screencast. There was no pop shifter. I wasn't writing for anybody. I bought my ticket outright. I went there just for the movies and only had like two friends at the time. And that was my first encounter. It was just a fan going there learning this. So with me, once my personality and my way is that once you do something to me where you agitate me or piss me off, I usually steer clear of you for the rest of my life. That's just how I am. It's just if there's some bad juju around there that I can feel, I'm probably not going to associate with you just because I'm really good and keen at picking up those shitty things. So that said, stayed away from him. All that unfolded. You know, I believe the correct thing to say is that he stopped being the editor-in-chief, I guess, at Birth Movie's death. He was taken off that thing, but they kept him in the background doing some, copyright or copy editor for Draft House Films. I guess that is the story. That was not told to the public. It was hidden. It surfaced once on a byline for Fantastic Fest of the movie write-ups. His name was at the end. So that means that if people aren't familiar with that on the site, when there's a description of the movie, the person that was very gung-ho about programming it or wanted to speak on behalf of it or just write it up just because they had to and no one else did, their name is in the corner. Well, Farachi's name showed up, I guess, on a couple films, and that's kind of how all that was brought to light and said that he was still hired at the Draft House. So a lot of people felt betrayed. Fantastic Fest was still going to continue, but it kept going downhill for the statements that Tim League said. You could find those online. I'm not going to repeat those. They just weren't good.
There's a really great write-up. I'll put it in the show notes. I think Slash Film did a really comprehensive write-up about all this. And it's really good, really well done, and links to everything else. So I'll put that into the show notes, everybody.
Yeah, and you can read it for yourself, and everybody can interpret it differently. And that's another thing is that, you know, my opinion, real quick, was just there was no real apology at first. And then there was it felt like excuses rather than just fessing up. That's not an accident, you know, for people of that nature and that behavior. You know, if this is like a one-time thing, you know, from somebody that, you know, was a good person at heart and, you know, that they fucked up one time, this might be a totally different case. But this is a person that has been known to be very vile in that community. So that's the reason why people reacted the way they did. And I don't frown upon anybody that acted the way they did, that didn't want to go to Fantastic Fest. You know, I know Todd Brown stepped down from the programming team and Fantastic Fest. And then also with, a couple other people that just didn't want to go. So they, you know, refunded their badge, or they just didn't show up. So with that, there was kind of this cloud over Fantastic Fest on the first couple days that we were there. Kristen Bell, who is not the actress that a lot of people thought when I said that, a lot of people were like, Kristen Bell's at Fantastic Fest? It's like, yeah, sure. And it's like, wait, no, not that Kristen Bell. So Kristen Bell is like one of the higher ups along with stands next to Tim League and does a lot of the business. And then Tim League wasn't there at Fantastic Fest. He was going around to all of the Draft House cinemas across the nation. speaking to them, asking questions. And I guess in my eyes, I felt that they were trying to come up with a plan. It's something that's not going to be overnight. You know, they needed an HR to come in. They need a plan for this to happen, because it is happening everywhere, just not in the cinema world. And that's one thing that I really was trying to, you know, tell people is like, this is just not here. This is everywhere. This has been happening since I can remember, of, you know, women feeling unsafe and, you know, men just being dicks. You know, this is just a small fragment of the issue. It's in the cinema world. It's just that this is just on the edge. It's probably a little bit, you know, I feel that we could focus on it because we are such a close community, and maybe we can, and we are, I feel that we're putting a stop to it and, putting our foot down and saying, this is not okay. Giving, that security and that freedom for people to come forward, and speak their minds and tell us and tell the world that, this is happening. And this is not okay. Making them feel comfortable, coming to these festivals, going to the theater, working in the field, working in the industry, whatever it is. Because it is a male dominated industry, and it doesn't need to be. So that's all I can really say on behalf of that. But Kristen Bell did make a speech at the beginning of the fest, you know, just saying a lot has happened. They're working on it. There's more to come. And that's all she could say, because there wasn't really anything concrete that was happening at the moment. This is going to take a lot of work in order to speak to people, to rid the scum out of everywhere and kind of get their bearings straight and be able to formulate a plan and execute it and it be successful and not just be something that we're putting a masking up there and it falls through immediately or no one really follows it and it just continues to happen. Mm-hmm. So, you got something to say, Steph? I feel like you do.
I just had a quick question. Sure. While it was going on, I saw a good number of tweets about people mentioning that we weren't there to hear the conversations that were going on, that there was a lot of talk about it. And I was just curious if you knew of any maybe formal roundtables or like, you know, like scheduled talks, anything like that, or if it was more like everyone was just talking about it and trying to figure it out.
Absolutely. And that was a lot of questions I had. And a lot of people, friends on Twitter, were asking me, along with just strangers, just saying, hey, we can't see this. We can't hear it. You know, you're saying it's going on, but what is really happening? And this is what happened. Carrie League, who is Tim League's wife, was there. She was there in a liaison's capacity, representing the Draft House, not there to see movies, not there to introduce movies, not there to work. She stood there for 7 to 8 days under the canopy where everybody's standing, having conversations with everybody she could. I spoke to her. She is listening. She is taking notes. She wanted to know your thoughts. She wanted to know what makes you feel unsafe. She wanted to know what we could do to change. And that's what she did. And that wasn't really published, I don't think, in too many articles, that Carrie League stood there without a badge, just there in that capacity, listening to people.
Right. And, I didn't hear that. I only heard Tim wasn't a presence there.
Right. And that's
I didn't hear about Carrie.
Yeah, there's a lot of things that weren't really, I don't know, I feel that certain things are tweaked. So Carrie was there, and yeah, she spoke to everybody, but I think a lot of people, and this isn't attacking anybody. I feel that a lot of these articles and things are written to get people's attention. And I don't know why that wasn't brought up, is that she was there. She stood there for 10 hours, 12 hours a day. Every time I left a movie, I saw her standing there speaking to not her friends It was just total random people. She would walk up to people and talk to them. A lot of people know her in general. So it wasn't like, you know, she was a complete stranger. She knows the community very well. She was very involved in the beginning of the Draft House until she, you know, had the twins. That's when she kind of took a step back and, you know, be a mom. And that's what she wanted to do. She wanted to focus on her kids rather than the crazy antics of the fucking Draft House, which I completely understood. But she is stepping out from that role as mom, and I think she is becoming more involved than she should be, you know, because she's played a big part in the history of the Draft House. But, yeah, she was there. She listened. I'm sure all that got back to Tim. And I know that they weren't going to release a statement or something of what they're doing, because it takes a while for this. You know, there's lawyers involved. There's, you know, you have to have somebody write up, you know, like, you know, a brochure document, whatever it is, you know, a policy. And you want everybody to look at that and view it and make sure that they have covered everything. So Kristen Bell spoke. Carrie League was there. I believe what I was told, and of course I was not, I don't know that this actually happened, but there was a invitation for women only before the festival, and they all got together. That location was not disclosed, but I did speak to a couple women that were there. They didn't shed any light of what they talked about, but I do know it did happen. But time and where was not said, but apparently that happened too. And I was wish that someone would come out and say what they talked about, but I think that's more or less maybe just a private thing of, you know, saying this is not okay. Speak up. And that I have no idea what was said, but that did happen as well. Now, as far as like the other conversations, everybody was talking about it that I knew, that I was friends with. We spoke about it. We spoke to the programmers. We spoke to people that worked at the Draft House that were in higher capacity of making changes. You know, Michael Winchester, the, you know, manager there, and everything else, just speaking on behalf. And no one really kept quiet about it. The only thing that was done and said, or not said, I guess I should say, and this is what a lot of people need to understand, especially people like Todd Brown, who I like Todd. I don't have any beef with him, but he did throw one of my tweets out there and edited it down to what I was actually saying and made me look like I was a hypocrite and contradicting myself when I spoke, which I was not. So thanks, Todd, for that. I said that people are talking about it everywhere, but programmers, servers, and people like that are not, and they're not supposed to, because they're not obligated. And honestly, they could lose their job if they spoke against something that is still kind of in limbo and process. You can't ask a server, hey, what are you guys doing to make the Draft House more, you know, safer for the women? Who's going to, like, they have no right to ask that to somebody that's just a worker bee there. And we'll get into that during one of the screenings that somebody asked that question in a Q&A, which was extremely inappropriate, especially at that time, I believe. But we'll get into that a little bit later when we talk about the film. But that was kind of the cloud that was there. It was there for about a couple days. Then it started lightening up a little bit. And that's when the Harry Knowles story broke, which was for when I say this, and I think a lot of people said this, and a lot of people took it the wrong way. And when they said it's no surprise, the people that said no surprise didn't know what was actually happening.
Right. I just knew he's a fucking slime ball. Same thing with like
Harry Knowles is a slime ball. I've avoided Harry Knowles my entire life,
yeah,
just because of how he acts, and he acts that he is super superior to everybody. I mean, this guy holds a yearly marathon at the Draft House, and you don't buy tickets. You have to be invited by him by filling out an application. That's the type of person that Harry Knowles is. And then he sits there and opens presents on stage to show everybody what he got. So that is who Harry Knowles is. He's, I mean, honestly, I've never read Ain't It Cool News ever, especially Harry Knowles reviews. But, I mean, I had no idea people were screen capping what he was saying. I mean, this guy is vile and fucking disgusting. And
I stopped reading them a long time ago just for that reason. I was just like, ugh, like that.
No, it's very gross, and I had no idea he was writing that just because I've always steered clear of him. So when we say that, it's not a surprise, I think that's what people are meaning. People that were friends with Harry Knowles are the ones that kept quiet. So yeah, it was no surprise that he is a pig in any more than we already thought he was. And that was brought to light about him, and many people from Ain't It Cool News quit. Almost all of them. Which brought,
except for the one troll that hit me up the other day.
Yeah, I know. I think Alan Cerny dropped out. Eric Vespi did, which was the major one, because he's been with Ain't It Cool News forever that I can remember. The only people that stayed were the women, which I thought was a little odd. But that's just me. But there was two women there covering Fantastic Fest for him. But anyways, Harry Knowles is not there either, because I think he knew that story was going to break. And many people came forward about him. And that's an easy way to get rid of that, is you just throw him out of the draft house and have him not part of anything. What happens to Ain't It Cool News is what's going to happen to Ain't It Cool News. He's saying his sister is running it, which I don't believe. I believe that's still Harry. And I just don't understand the fascination with that site, with him, with anything. And honestly, that's all I have to say about that, personally. But anyways, that was brought to light. And, of course, everybody talked about that. And many women came forward telling their stories and things that happened to them, and voicing their opinions on how we can fix it as men and as a business for the draft house. And I thought it was good. It was one of the better Fantastic Fest I've ever been to. It felt clean. Because I will say that 2010 I went, you'd be lucky to see two ladies at the draft house during Fantastic Fest. Now I would say it's a good, it felt like half and half to me. But I think probably more or less maybe 60-40, but still, a lot of women enjoying films, a lot of women writing about films. The boys club that Todd Brown talked about, I think that more or less went to kind of the cliques that were there at Fantastic Fest, with Fracci, with Harry. With those two gone, it just felt cleaner, more free. And honestly, after everything was said, it just felt good. To me, it did. I can't speak for everybody, of course, but I've been going to Fantastic Fest for 8 years. And this is definitely the less toxic of the fests, I believe. I believe those stones, rocks were turned over and we saw the maggots that were under them. And we were able to help women come forward and talk about their experiences, give them, I wouldn't say a platform, but a space to speak freely and not be called, a liar, or, hey, you can't, prove it. Well, you can't prove groping. You can't prove verbal harassment other than listening and understanding and believing. And I think that was a good space for people to voice their opinions. So that's about all I have to say about it. I think it was very a very good fest as far as getting that out and out there in the air. So, but anyways, we watched a lot of kick-ass movies too.
No kidding.
Yeah. Well, lots of good movies. So any other questions or comments or concerns that you guys had, or, you know, I think I addressed, I had a lot of questions, via DMs and Facebook. I also had a few hate mails saying, I can't believe you went to Fantastic Fest. If I didn't go, I wouldn't be able to talk about it. If I didn't go, I wouldn't be able to give my two cents. If I didn't go, I wouldn't be able to do this show and talk about all the cool stuff that actually did happen, and the more or less success of Fantastic Fest this year. So don't judge. You know, you can't just sit behind a keyboard and comment on everything if you're not there, knowing exactly what went on and how great it was. A lot of bad things surfaced, but a lot of great things happened because of that. So, anyways.
Right on. I reached out to Anya Novak, since this was her first Fantastic Fest as well. She's at Beyond Fest right now, so she couldn't join us. But I reached out to her, and maybe I'll be able to talk to her.
Yeah, it would be good to
and put that into the episode as well.
To hear a first timer, especially a woman's opinion, about how it felt. But I met Anya there. Incredibly nice.
Lucky.
You know, I felt that most, and I have a lot of lady friends there, and most of them felt safe. And everything like that. I felt a good camaraderie with everybody, and especially men who eventually knew that this isn't okay. And I talked to a lot of guys too about it. You know, Eric D. Snyder and I had some good conversations. Matt Wedge and I had, from Daily Grindhouse, had a cool conversation. Is that, we can sit back and retweet and like and comment all we want, but it's actually on the ground that we need to speak up and put a stop to anything. I think for me through life, I've had not. This isn't at the Draft House, of course. I've never had actually happen at the Draft House. But just any experience, because this happens everywhere, and this is on a different level other than just Fantastic Fest and the Draft House, Alamo Draft House. But I think as a man, I've learned, I've always been a supporter of listening and believing, but I've also had those instances where it's like, and this was something that I saw a lot during that time there, is that a woman will come forward and tell you what happened and then tell you not to say anything or make it a big deal, which I think I've learned something from that. And not to disrespect their confidence in you. But maybe that's not okay to sit back and just let it happen. You don't have to go and shout it from the rooftops, but you need to, you know, tell them that this is not okay. And you need to say something because I believe you. And I think maybe that's the direction that we need to go as men, listening, supporting, not asking for evidence because that's ridiculous. Just listening up and understanding what it's like to be anybody to come forward and have people automatically not believe you. It's tough. And I think what I've learned is that, you know, listen, support, and act. But anyways, that's just me. I know everybody can handle it a little bit differently. But that's something I think I learned during the festival, is that, you know, that. But anyways.
Yeah. There's a lot of fear tied to it. And I think this has showed the danger of cult of personalities. You know, with like Devin and Harry, they were untouchable for so many years and they were given so many perks. And for everything I hear, it sounds like most people didn't really like them, that they weren't particularly nice or very professional people. but because they got the clicks or the access, you know, everyone put up with it. And that makes people even more afraid to come forward. Even when this is all going down, I got messages saying, you know, like you said, please don't tell anyone I said this because I don't want to lose this job or I don't want to lose this opportunity. And that's another aspect we really need to get through our heads, is that no one is untouchable.
Yeah.
And that's a big fear, is, you know, just like basic economics, people are afraid. A lot of women are afraid because, I don't know. I'm sorry. It's just the power that holds, that causes a lot of fear. It's not always gender-based. It's just building these people up to the point where we don't even know where to go mm-hmm. to talk about it.
Or yeah. even how to react in that situation, you know, because of that person's, you know, I guess history or their status.
Yeah, and it might sound funny, like you think of like a geeky movie reviewer being intimidating, but it really can be, especially when you're kind of ensconced in like this little niche thing. So yeah, I think kind of dismantling this, the cult of personality thing, that's also really important. That basically we should just all be there for the films, for each other. I mean, I feel like this was supposed to be like fun and creatively passionate and all this sick stuff just got weaved in throughout the years.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right on. All right. Well, are we ready to move on into films?
Yeah, I think it's that time since we got, spoke on behalf of that. And,
yeah,
you know, I think that's a lot of what people needed to hear. Yeah. Eventually it's going to go right back into that because of a film I'm going to talk about, but you know, okay. Hey, we'll make that quick.
No, it's all good. I mean, I'm fine with it if it's all relevant to the experience.
Oh no, it is. Yeah. Totally it's good. The other all thing right. that blew up Fantastic Fest.
Dude,
but anyway,
God almighty. All right, here we go. Buckle up, everybody. So Anya Novak joins us to talk about her experience at the Fantastic Fest. Anya, what's up?
Nothing. I'm doing good.
This was your first experience of Fantastic Fest. So I of course wanted to have you on to talk about your experience, especially with all the drama and everything that has unfolded with Draft House, Fantastic Fest, Harry Knowles, all the kind of stuff that we have discussed earlier on the podcast. So, what's your history with Fantastic Fest? I mean, I'm sure like me, you've just seen a lot of people going every year. And, what made you finally take the plunge to make your way over to Austin?
I'd seen a lot of people, you know, enjoying it every year, saying it was the highlight of their year, the best film festival to go to. It's a really welcoming atmosphere. And I figured it would be my best bet for a first film festival. I'd never been to one before, even, you know, just as a lay person. So, I thought I'd try. And it turned out that a few things happened for me where I was able to secure a press pass in time. And, I was able to get a flight and someone to watch the kids, and it all just worked out in my favor this year, so I was able to go.
Nice. So coming into it, I mean, we were kind of all blindsided with this stuff, you know, like a week before everyone started, you know, making their way over to Austin. What was your, all this is on everyone's, it's like my social media feed, the news and everything is full of everything from, you know, first it was with Draft House and everything, and now Harvey Weinstein and all this stuff. It's an important conversation to have. And me knowing a lot of strong women like yourself and BJ and Stephanie and many more, I mean, my wife included, was this like a long overdue conversation? I mean, it is a long overdue conversation, but in this, were you kind of blindsided by this, the sudden, you know, kind of onslaught of all this?
Yeah, I was kind of blindsided by the fact that it was a public thing, and yeah. And I mean, I wasn't exactly surprised that what was going on was going on, because that kind of thing has been happening to a lot of women in the industry for a while. But that it hit so soon to Fantastic Fest, that was, yeah, that kind of came out of nowhere. And it was kind of weird, because there were people that were calling for something of a boycott, mm-hmm. saying, you know, you shouldn't go, you shouldn't support this company, shouldn't support Draft House in any way, shape, or form. And I was surprised to find that there were a lot of women who were saying, if you're going, you're a horrible person. And it kind of put me in a weird place, because, yeah. you know, I had already, you know, plane tickets bought, you know, I've got the pass, and I've got someone to write for, an outlet to put all my work to. And it kind of made me feel crappy, especially coming from a series of other women in the industry that you know, that they wouldn't understand how, you know, people who have been to festivals before and know exactly how much time and planning go into it. Mm-hmm. That kind of put me in a weird place, but I went anyway. And once I was there, I found that while Draft House themselves weren't exactly handling it, they weren't getting in front of it and handling it, you know, from the first day on. It was kind of something that hung in the atmosphere. Mm-hmm. And the majority of conversations that I had about what was going on came about with other women and men, but mostly women, in places like the women's bathroom and in line when we're just waiting to get into our screening, and outside after the screening, and in the highball and in the lounge and everything. So there were lots of conversations happening, just not in any official capacity that I participated in, mm-hmm. or that I knew of otherwise.
Did that seep in any of the screenings that you had at all?
Kind of in one, when we went and saw Revenge, mm-hmm. that night, the director, Coralie, I'm going to mess up her name, Farjat, F-A-R-G-E-A-T.
Okay.
Coralie Farjat. I'm not sure exactly how to pronounce that.
That'd be my best guess.
Yeah. So she, just before the screening, she had introduced the film, and she said, you know, there's kind of an elephant in the room, and I want to address it. And this film is representative of women not sitting down and taking it anymore. Mm-hmm. Women, you know, standing up to that sort of oppression. And so that kind of shell shocked the audience a little bit. And there were a couple of people who left the screening who were a little, the word triggered is kind of overused today, but that was yeah. kind of what was going on, you know, that had brought up some feelings and some put people in a dark place, mm-hmm. sort of, kind of in a good way. So, yeah, that was the only time that personally that I saw that a director or that someone had addressed it directly in a screening.
Okay.
From what I saw.
Yeah. 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 I mean, it's a tough thing to kind of walk into this, like, into this sort of atmosphere when normally film fests, for the most part, I mean, I've never been to one. So myself, mm-hmm. When I started all this stuff, I've, you know, been married, kids, full-time job. I've never been able to break away for that amount of time. And I'm still trying to figure out if I'm going to go to anything next year. Like, the kids are getting mm-hmm. older, but yeah, I mean, I imagine you want this to be kind of a vacation in a sense, working vacation, right. Especially if you're writing for an outlet. I mean, this is, it's work, but it's also, you're meeting a lot of people in the industry, a lot of other film enthusiasts, and especially the genres that Fantastic Fest, you know, prides itself in. So yeah, I can totally see that. And just kind of outside looking in, all of us online, everything, kind of getting the feedback from people who are there, you know, it's been good to see this discussion out in the open. It seems to be, it's not plateauing. Like, we're still going up the mountain of all this, or I don't even know, maybe right. maybe we're digging deeper. I don't know the right analogy to use for this, the way things are going. But, I mean, I said this online, like, 2017 has been such a dumpster fire that, you know, I mean, at least I feel like a lot of this is being dealt with in a healthy way, hopefully, and a lot of good conversations coming out of it. Hopefully, mm-hmm. the right change will come out of it. So that's a rare look at me being optimistic. But I really, you know, I really hope that that's the case. And, you know, as far as we're concerned here, we're always going to be championing positive change and positive discussion, which is all this kind of stuff. So, all right. So moving on from there, we don't have time to go through all, but you were there for half the fest. How many movies did you see during that half? I mean, there's a whole, there's a shit ton to get to.
4, 8, 12, 13, 14, 15.
Wow. That's
15 films. Well, I mean, a few of them were collections of shorts.
Okay.
But I sat through 15 screenings.
and how many days is that? Is that, it's almost like a week and a half festival, isn't it?
Yeah. So I was there for, I think, 4 days.
4 days. Okay. I mean, that to me, that seems like enough.
I saw just about everything I wanted to see. There were a couple of films I missed out on, but for the most part, I got to see what I wanted to see.
Okay, cool. So for the rest of the time that we have you, if you want to just kind of go through some of the highlights of the films, maybe, I don't know, top five, then honorable mentions, or if there's more, that's fine. But I would love to hear kind of your favorite films of the fest and kind of, you know, if you can do some mini reviews on those films, that'd be awesome.
Oh, okay. All right. So the first one I got would be Super Dark Times. And that was directed by Kevin Phillips. And that one kind of blew me away. And I went into it just based on the trailer. It just seemed like something I wanted to see. These teenagers, Zach and Josh, they're best buddies. And they kind of – a horrible accident occurs. And after that accident, they're affected in different ways, and they kind of descend down this dark spiral. And I would compare it to the movie Juice. I don't know if you ever saw Juice.
Oh, okay.
Like a 90s movie. Yeah.
Hell yeah. I have that on Blu-ray.
Yeah. So that – I think plot-wise, that's the closest thing to Super Dark Times. Okay. But as far as like atmosphere, I would compare it to something like Brick.
Oh, wow.
Remember that movie with Joseph Gordon-Levitt and whatnot?
That's right in my alley for sure.
Right. So it's got that kind of vibe to it. It's a really dark kind of coming-of-age thriller, but it's heavy. It's a heavy movie. And I really liked it. The two leads were absolutely amazing. Charlie, I'm going to mispronounce this name.
You're in good company.
Tahan. Tahan sounds dumb. It's got to be Tahan. Okay, whatever. The next one's Owen Campbell. That one's easy. Even with wine, I can pronounce that. Owen Campbell. And they did a great job. You know, at that screening, they handed out these little temporary tattoos. It just says Super Dark Times on it. I don't know why, but I have it. I'm going to wear it one of these days. That's very Instagram worthy.
Nice. Is this the director's Kevin Phillips? Is this his first feature film?
I want to say it is.
It looks like it.
I want to say that it was written specifically for him as his first feature.
Wow. Okay.
I believe he knew the writers, you know, well enough to where, like, I think they all like went to film school together or something along those lines. God, I'm not an expert on this. I don't know. I don't really remember the QA afterwards.
No, that's fine.
I think I was drinking wine during that.
Yeah, yeah.
What stuck out to me was the music. The music was by Ben Frost. Very atmospheric, very, very heavy, very dark. And it just had so many elements that were up my alley.
Mm-hmm.
Everything from the plot to the pacing to the tone, just the morbid tone of it all. There were some surreal nightmare sequences throughout that really kind of got under my skin. And I feel like there wasn't a bad actor in the bunch. Like there were stellar performances from everybody involved in the movie, even peripheral characters like the boys' mothers, their sisters, even, you know, just schoolmates, just people who didn't even matter in the context of the story. They did an amazing job as well.
Very nice.
I can't say enough good things about Super Dark Times.
How old are the kids in this?
They're teens. They're like young teens.
Okay.
I want to say like, they might have been in middle school. No, they got to be like freshmen in high school.
They got bikes. Anything with like kids in dark places with flashlights and bicycles, like totally there.
And it was the 90s. It was supposed to take place like kind of pre-Columbine.
Okay.
So I don't know if that makes a difference, but you know, bikes and whatnot. The next film that I kind of want to hype up is Brawl in Cell Block 99. Mm-hmm. And that one was directed by S. Craig Zahler. And this is the guy who gave us Bone Tomahawk. I don't know if you saw that movie.
Oh, yeah.
I think it's on Amazon right now, actually. It's on Amazon Prime and it's streaming.
It's fantastic.
If you have a chance to watch it. It's fantastic. It is. It's amazing.
And give it a chance. Yes. Get through the end. It's awesome. Well, I mean, some people, especially Netflix streaming things, like if it doesn't catch them right away, I mean, I'm a little more patient when I'm in a theater, but I notice if I'm watching something streaming, I'm a little less patient. I always have to force myself to, you know, keep the phone down and just focus on this film until it's done.
Yeah. And with Bone Tomahawk, you're going to get the payoff. You'll get what you need. You get what you want. It delivers. But Brawl in Cell Block 99 is kind of the same. Well, it starts out, you know, pretty riveting. I mean, they really pull you in there. Now, this is starring Vince Vaughn, Jennifer Carpenter, who you probably saw in Dexter, The Exorcism of Emily Rose. She's been in some stuff. You'd recognize her face if you saw her. Udo Kier is in it. And fucking Don Johnson. Yes. Don Johnson shows up in a great role as well. This movie is very brutal. It's very bloody. I should probably say what it's about. Vince Vaughn is this cat who has some anger issues. He's got a couple of anger issues, and he is a drug runner for this kingpin. Bad things happen. A couple of things go wrong. He gets caught. He goes to jail. And when he's there, he is his sort of betrayal of his boss is not taken lightly. And so his wife is kidnapped. His pregnant wife is kidnapped and threatened in so many words. And they tell him that if he wants her to live and their unborn baby to live, he has to dispatch certain characters in cell block 99. Cell block 99 is in a maximum security prison. He is in a minimum security prison, so he has to work his way over to that prison. And the way he does that is very brutal and very harsh. And by the time he gets there, it's just this descent into depravity and violence. It's ultra violence. And what was amazing was the practical effects that were used. I don't remember seeing anything that I would call CGI. There was a lot of these fight sequences that themselves were amazing, but they get very bloody and skin is torn off, bones are broken, and well, obviously, you know, bones being broken, that's probably CGI, but some of the more visceral effects are obviously done practically, especially in the last few minutes of the movie. They keep the violence going up until the very end, until the end credits roll. And man, I love that movie. I could watch that a million times. It's kind of like it's a good treat for exploitation fans. If you like prison movies, if you like brawl movies, if you liked even something as recent as Blood and Bone, you're probably going to be down for Brawl in Cell Block 99.
Awesome. Man, you're dropping some some deep cuts with Blood and Bone.
Blood and Bone. Yeah. Oh, man. When I was in the Army a while back, that was the DVD that was passed around from room to room in the barracks. Everybody would watch it. Everybody could quote it.
Yeah.
It's, you know, it's a crowd pleaser.
Michael Jai White.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Can't go wrong with that dude. Black Dynamite. Yes. So, Brawl in Cell Block 99, super dark times. Let's see, the next film I would talk about would be Revenge. Now, that was the one where the director, Coralie Farja, that sounds French. I'm going to go with that. Farja.
Yeah, sounds good.
She was the one who addressed the so-called drama that had been happening and kind of hovering around the atmosphere of the festival. But after she introduced the film, the credits rolled and we got started, and it was amazing. This young woman, a beautiful young woman, Matilda Anna Ingrid Lutz is her name. She, that's the actress's name, not the character's name. She is dating some fancy fancy schmancy fat cat. This guy who's obviously very rich, got his own helicopter pad and whatnot. And he lives, you know, way, way out in the desert. Got his nice little pad with a pool and everything. And she is hanging out with him and two of his drug-running buddies. And one thing leads to another. She dances a little provocatively. One of them takes a shining to her, and he rapes her when the boyfriend is out. Also, I should say she's the mistress of this guy, this boyfriend. She is not his wife. He is married and unfaithful. And so after she is raped, she doesn't take kindly to it. She's a little upset, as you mm-hmm, would be. Mm-hmm. And she brings this up to the boyfriend, and he kind of tries to brush it off and cover it up, and offers her money, offers to send her right back home. And she basically says, no, that's not enough. I'm going to tell people, you know, this guy needs to go to jail and whatnot. And he shoves her off of a cliff, and she gets impaled on a tree, and he leaves her for dead for a little bit. And then later on decides to come down and try to fetch the body and finish whatever he started. If she wasn't dead already. But it turns out she was not dead. She lived. And then she takes revenge.
Mm-hmm.
And and it's one of those French movies. So, you know that French extremity thing that they got going on.
It seems to have a pretty small cast. Is that correct?
It is. It was like maybe four people total.
Wow.
So it was the boyfriend, his two homies, and then her, basically. Wow. Yeah, that was for the entirety of the movie. Yeah. And she has to heal, and she has to fix whatever is going on, her injuries, and she has to hide from them. And then, you know, as she exacts her revenge, it's in a very bloody, gory way. And, they do not skimp on the corn syrup blood in this movie, especially in the last, say, half hour of the movie. It gets really nasty. And, it gets so bloody, in fact, that there's moments where several characters slip on the blood that's on the floor. And I don't even know if that was intentional or not, but I thought that was kind of cool.
It's always a nice touch. So,
right. That they slip on the blood. I really enjoyed that one. I would try to, if I could snag it on Blu-ray, I definitely would. That's got replay value to it, at least for me. I'm one of those people that likes the weird, the French extremity films. I like the really gory stuff, especially when it's rape revenge. Some people are kind of touchy with it. I don't know how you feel about rape revenge movies in general.
They're not. I'll watch them. I'm a little lenient. I'm not lenient. I'm leery of approaching them. Mm-hmm. I have to kind of hear a lot about it as far as like, is it worth, you know, is it worth it? And then of course, I'm always. I wouldn't want to, if it's like too exploitative of like the rape scene or whatever, like I definitely a bit skittish with that. But if it pays off and the assholes pay in brutal and bloody ways, that always is a plus. So it's not a subgenre I seek out, but it is something that I will I had to do a little research on it before I sit down and watch it. So this one sounds right up my alley for sure.
The director is a woman, and you can kind of see that in her treatment of the rape versus the revenge. Mm-hmm. The rape sequence is not, she doesn't shy away from it. The brutality of it, the horror of it is fully there on screen, but it is not exploited in the way where there would be close-ups of nipples and there'd mm-hmm. be, you know how they exploit rape scenes.
Yeah.
That is not done here, but the revenge is, I would say it's satisfying for each of them, for every single one. It's not quick. People suffer, people's punishment, the rapists and the enablers' punishments fit the crime. I'll say that.
Perfect.
Yeah. Okay. And the last film I want to talk about here is Let the Corpses Tan. And this is by Helena Cattet and Bruno Forzani. And these are the guys who, if you're familiar with Neo Giallo, is what that's the term I've heard. I just call it Giallo.
Neo Giallo. Just call it this.
I think you should just call it Giallo. Yeah. They did Amer, and they had recently done The Strange Color of Your Body's Tears, mm-hmm. which I really like. Now, these are two really, really stylistic Giallo films. The closest American counterpart I can think of off the top of my head would be Quentin Tarantino with exploitation films. They have a they take a different approach in this film. This film has more of a plot. Previously, they had kind of been style over substance. And this time, there's a lot of style, but there is definitely more of a narrative written in. And some people don't like that, but I really did. And then the story goes in the Mediterranean, this gang steals about 250 kilos of gold, these big gold bars. And they take shelter at a hideout, this little hut in the middle of nowhere out in the Mediterranean. At this hideout where a woman artist is kind of channeling her muse. And then cops show up. And a couple of cops show up. And then things go sour from there. And it's something of a last stand movie at this house. Okay. And then there's bad blood. There's betrayed alliances. People switch sides. And of course there's a cop there the whole time. That's trying to shoot people. A couple of cops, by the way. And it's not particularly violent or gory, but there's a lot of heavy, it's hard to describe if you haven't seen A Mare or Strange Color, but there are liberties taken with things like shootings and there's dream sequences and lots of close-ups of really abstract things. So I enjoyed it as a fan of giallo movies in general, and I would recommend it to anybody who likes those sort of movies. Most mainstream people it might be a bit much, mm-hmm. But I would encourage people to check that one out. I think it's Kateh and Forzani's best.
Very nice.
I think it's the best one that they've had so far.
Awesome.
And that's it. That's all four movies. Yes.
Very
that's
cool.
It.
Very cool.
Super Dark Times, Brawl in Cell Block 99, Revenge, and Let the Corpses Tan.
Awesome. I think Brad echoes a few of those, which is fantastic. So if you're pulling for those films, and Brad is, I think these are like musts. Just everyone,
absolutely,
put these down on your list right now. So, all right. Very cool. And then you were just at Beyond Fest. So now you have two film festivals under your belt. Or did you?
You know,
or did you
I didn't
do
get
the,
to go. I didn't get to go to Beyond Fest.
Oh, you didn't?
I think so. No, at the last second, I couldn't go.
Oh, no.
I really wanted to, but I couldn't line up the childcare and it's, you know, kids.
Sorry to rip open that scab. I apologize.
That's all right.
All right. Well, I mean, I'm sure that if things work out, this isn't your first film fest.
Yeah, hopefully I can go next year. I'm trying to go to a couple next year, maybe South by Southwest. And there's a new one called North Bend Film Festival that I'd like to go to as well.
Okay.
It's got some weird stuff. I like weird stuff.
Yeah. There you go.
Are you going to try to go to Fantastic Fest next year?
I'm going to try. It's on the agenda. I need to start planning now if I'm going to make it work. So,
right. It's kind of a, you know, especially if you've got kids, it's kind of a, it's an endeavor.
Well, I mean, yeah, kids and the wife and set vacation time. And then there's vacations,
right,
that family vacations we need to plan, you know, so it's like, you know, there's a lot of, you know, discussions and compromise and mm-hmm. bribing, things like that. So
I would recommend getting the first half or second half badge. I think that's,
right,
that's enough.
That's probably what I'm going to do.
It'll get you what you need.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, Anya, thank you so much for your report.
Thank you for having me.
I'm glad you're right. Well, I was glad we were able to make this work so I can actually hear your perspective, because I think it's important. So
thank you.
So I'm going to go through some of these fairly quickly because if I don't spend too much time on it, that just means that I did not care for it. I'm not here to shit on films that don't have distro or people who actually like them. Watch everything that I mention. Make up your own minds. So the first film at Fantastic Fest, since the first film was the opening night film was pulled from Fox Searchlight because of the allegations that arose. We were left with just whatever, and that was fine. I didn't really care. So my first film I saw was The Line. It was a crime drama mixed with some dark comedy. It was okay. The next film I saw
was
Rift. It was the gay thriller.
Yeah, the Icelandic. Yeah.
Yeah. So like that was kind of neat to see. You know, there's not too many films with gay couples or gay relationships in the thriller or horror genre. So I thought that was kind of neat. To use that, it wasn't like a catalyst to tell a story. It was just
protagonists happen to be gay men.
Yeah. And they didn't really focus on that, which, you know, I'm not used to seeing that. And I thought that was, that was pretty neat to kind of do a thriller, in that aspect. So it's about, a man who, meets his he realizes his ex-boyfriend is kind of distraught, receives a phone call from him, goes out to this like secluded area where he is staying, and they encounter a force. It is thriller, it is supernatural, kind of
contemplative.
It takes some twists and turns. The sound design is absolutely incredible. It is legitimately frightening at times, which I did not expect the film to be so tense. But it's a weird little thriller psychological tale. But I suggest it. I thought it was a decent movie. What'd you think, Steph, since you saw it?
Yeah, I loved it too. It was, and it's stunning. It's absolutely stunning.
Yeah.
And seeing a thriller, set in that kind of, setting. I've seen landscapes I've never really seen in a film before, let alone a thriller. And it really added a whole new dimension to it. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah. It really gave you that sense of isolation, which is scary.
Yeah, absolutely. No. Especially since a huge chunk of the film is just these two men. They really carry the picture. So like, this is one where you really need to pay attention, just let yourself sink into it. But really pays off.
Yeah.
Does someone we know design the poster, Brad?
Oh yeah, that's right. Our friend Omar Osuarez on Twitter, who is known to create some really big posters for Hollywood productions and independent films. But yeah, he did the poster for that. So he also designed our pins, if that tells you anything. So, so next up was one of my top 10, called Cold Hell. It is a German neo giallo, feels like it's set in the scummy 90s, about a female taxi cab driver who witnesses a murder from next door, a brutal murder, I may add, and she is on the run and trying to protect herself from this no-face killer that she knows that is hunting her. It's hard hitting. It takes some turns that you would not expect in a film. It looks great because it's wet and nasty and it's always like raining. It makes you feel like you're really watching a 90s film. But also has kind of this yellow twist that just kills in it. And it's, I may add that she's also a kickboxer. So if that is any inclination of how hard this film can hit you, it gets pretty rough. But yeah, it's basically a kind of a neo giallo slasher with, the female heroine aspect that is, trying to run for her life, but also puts up her dukes and battles as well, which is a lot of fun.
I'm shocked neo giallo made your top 10.
I know, right? Whoa. Also, it's weird because both neo giallo films actually made up there. So,
I love the German titles for these, though. Like, it sounds so much more badass than Cold Hell. It's Die Hole. Yeah.
So, next up was, I can't remember what country this is from. It's called Bad Genius. I want to say it was from Taiwan, but anyways, Bad Genius, it's such a weird genre mashup because it's about this, girl who is incredibly intelligent. And like, I'm talking about like 4.5 GPA bullshit like that.
Thailand, by the way. Thailand.
It's from Thailand? Okay. Yes. Thank you. So she basically works out a deal in school for people to cheat off of her, and they pay her money. And what starts off as basically a friend in need of help turns out to be five people that need help. Turns out to be the entire class, and then they go to like nationals, and she is basically turns into this heist movie where they're paying her, fucking thousands, hundreds of thousands of dollars to cheat on these tests and give the answers. It's got a killer soundtrack. It's got some really great moments as far as, watching these people act off one another. It gets really tense at times. It's really funny. All around, just a really great movie. But the soundtrack alone is just something to hopefully that makes it out there in the world because it's got such a good score. But I highly suggest it. It's something you wouldn't expect, but I don't know. It just hit a note for me that was just I loved every moment of it. Next up was another, I think maybe Bad Genius didn't hit my top 10. This is another top 10. So I will start off by saying this is my favorite film of the festival. What is really cool about going to a festival and you have your most anticipated list? So I had that one most anticipated movie. And it turned out to be my favorite, which is such a cool thing to happen because sometimes you build it up in your head too much and it's not as good as you hoped, or it's just not good at all, or it's just okay. This film like went above my expectations. So the directors of Amir and The Strange Color of Your Bodies and Tears have their new film out called Let the Corpses Tan. Which actually has more of a what'd you say, Sean?
I said I love the titles for their films. Like it's always intriguing.
Yeah. This one actually matches with what they're kind of what's happening. But it is a film with more of a narrative, which their two previous films didn't have kind of a narrative that you could follow. It's very visual, imagery wise, and all of that. This film actually has a storyline that is also quotation marks in the air storyline, but something you can follow at least. This is kind of a Eurocrime neo giallo mixed with a Western. So all those three things immediately got me rock hard inside and out. And it is so fucking good. It is so beautiful. Every one of their films, every single frame of their films is like a painting to me. Everything that they do, everything that they show, the sound design, the soundtrack, what they did is they pulled from old giallo films and used the scores to them. And I was just sitting there thinking – like no one's reacting. I'm like cheering in, like my hands are in the air. Cause I'm like, yes, it's this weird giallo that no one has seen from like 1972.
They made this for me.
Yeah. That's what it felt like. Cause at the end, like towards the end of the film, I was composing the tweet in my head. I was like, these directors love Who Saw Her Die. There's no doubt about it. Because there's certain things in the film where I was like, oh my God, I think that's an homage to, Who Saw Her Die. And then the last, like the huge climactic scene, the soundtrack to Who Saw Her Die kicks in and it's so fucking loud. And it's by Marcone. So like it's just so bombastic. If anybody knows the track, it's like it's like a bunch of children like doing this like la 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 la, but it's like it like hurts your brain because it's just so fucking loud, and it's very nerve wracking too. Like, it's just when the soundtrack kicks in the movie, in the actual movie, it's like, you know, shit's going down. But this film has everything for a film lover that loves stuff like visually. It's got some great characters. It's actually a movie about a shootout. A good hour of the film is just nothing but a shootout kind of in this rinky-dink, falling apart, Pueblo homes, I guess you could say, of this these people that did this heist are hiding out, and cops come because they know where they are, and they have this battle. It's not like really intense as far as that, but it gets – there's some blowing some heads up too. It's very gory, which a lot of their previous films are more or less just about color and beauty. This actually has some kick-ass gore in it. It's 100% Kino Lorber picked it up, expect it, buy it. It's perfect.
I saw that one on a ton of top 10 lists.
And I was glad to see that it was, because I think people are finally getting around. Because I remember when Amir came out in like 2009, I was going ape shit, and everybody was like, "Oh, that movie's boring." And I was like, "That's the most like intense movie I've seen all year. So go fuck yourself." I'm also a bias when it comes to Giallo. You just throw Giallo aspects in the film, I'll probably love it. So next up was this documentary is perfect. And also Larry Cohen was in attendance. King Cohen, two hours of a documentary, but it seems like it's 5 minutes. Beautiful doc about everything about Larry Cohen, from the beginning of when he was just a young kid, how he got his start, till the very end. I had no idea that Larry Cohen did the things he's done. That he is such a sought after screen. I knew he did a lot of screenwriting, but he is sought after. Like, people want Larry Cohen to write movies. Larry Cohen has a ton of writing credits. If you don't know, I mean, he has like 20 films under his belt, but he's written pilots to TV shows, wrote TV shows before he actually made his first film. And it's just such an intimate portrait of his life. And just, it's so funny too, because Larry Cohen, and was something I didn't know as well, Larry Cohen started as a comedian before he started writing TV. And the dude is fucking funny as hell. Oh my God. He had me rolling just in doing his Q&A, before and after, King Cohen, such a funny guy, I don't know. He's just a beautiful person inside and out. And also isn't afraid to speak his mind. One of my favorite quotes he said, he's like, I had to start directing my pictures that I started writing because people would just fuck them up. So he felt the only way to actually get a Larry Cohen film out there was for him to actually direct it. But such an awesome person, hilarious. See Keith Cohen. It will not disappoint. He's just so, so fucking good. So next up, real quick, everybody has seen this movie pretty much, but we saw it on 35 right after King Cohen. We walked to the theater next door and we watched Maniac Cop 2 on 35, which, written by Larry Cohen, who produced it. His hands were heavy in it. So Bill Lustig, he approves of Bill Lustig's work in the first and second movie. He says Bill's full of shit for the third one. Because even though Larry Cohen wrote the third film, he said they completely changed everything, and he told the plot of the third movie. And I'm like, God damn it, that sounds so fucking good. apparently, what's her name? Suzanne. Here, let me look it up real quick. I'll give the plot of. So the character, Lori Landon, Teresa Mallory, who ends up. At the end of the first one, into the second one with Bruce Campbell. Bruce Campbell meets his demise in the beginning of the second film. Lori Landon just ends up dying in the middle of the film. Well, apparently she didn't. She was injured. And so in the third film, the maniac Cordell wants her, and he goes after her. And I was like, and it turns out to be like this weird like love story. That sounds a lot better than the piece of shit that we saw in 1993 called Badge of Silence.
I don't even remember. But yeah. I own it, but I don't even remember the plot of that one.
So Maniac Cop 2 is great on the big screen. It's such a fun movie. It had one of the best Q&As ever because they gave some dirt on fucking Robert Davi. I feel like we could have used that against him and, you know, probably extorted him for some money. apparently he's a really skeezy dude and makes a lot of women come in his trailers and show him their feet. But Lori Landon didn't fall for it. She said, "Oh my God, I'm out of here."
So he just had a foot fetish.
Yeah. But like, he liked weird shit too. They kind of cut her off a little bit because, I mean, they were telling stories. Like, all it was is they were supposed to intro the movie and they just ended up talking about life and everything that happened. Zach Carlson was running the Q&A, and he was like, "Oh my God, I can't believe you guys are saying what you're saying. You're not even talking about Maniac Cop 2. You're not introducing it. You're just talking about dirt in like Hollywood on people." But it was such a great Q&A. It was so fun because those two obviously worked together quite a few times, and you could tell, you know, just the chemistry between them was still there. You know, and they love what they did. And then, you know, the Q&A after talking about how dangerous some of the stunts they did. Apparently the lead stunt guy for Maniac Cop 2 is actually one of the car drivers and stunt coordinators for Fast and the Furious movies. That's what he went on to do. He's like one of the highest paid like stunt coordinators in Hollywood. And he's the one that did all the crazy stuff. If you watch Maniac Cop 2 and you watch the stunts in Maniac Cop 2, you know that somebody really fucked up was doing that shit. But such a great little 35 millimeter print, Bill Lustig lent a fantastic vest to watch, his own personal print.
Nice.
So that was a lot of fun.
Good old Bill Lustig.
He's a great dude. We've had him on the show. Yeah. Listen to that episode. He's really, really funny. Got a lot, ton of stories. So next up was Apple Cart. Stars Barbara Crampton, Bria Grant, and AJ Bowen.
Oh, boy.
Dynamite cast. It's a movie.
Oh, shut up.
So,
shut up.
It's a movie.
It's like one of the best casts.
You know, I'm friends with Bria Grant. You know, we talk about books online periodically, and she's just a fun person. And, you know, she's been on the show, and you know, we chat back and forth. She's just a great person. So it was and a friend. So it was really tough. You know, I sat next to her in Thelma, and we were just talking. You know, I was talking about, you know, my daughter and stuff like that. And you were just talking about life. And she said, "What have you seen?" And I was going down the list, and she goes, "Have you seen Apple Cart?" And I was like, "Yeah." And she's like, "Oh, okay." And I was like, "Yeah, I watched it." And she's like, "Okay." And I was like, "And I also saw this." And I was like, I just knew.
Man.
She knew. I was like, "I'm not going to focus on it. I really don't want to talk about Apple Cart." So anyways, it's a movie. Next up was Top Knot Detective, a mockumentary about, you know, this fictitious TV show that existed in the 90s in Japan. It's – people might like it. Next up was Gemini. This played at South By, apparently. I didn't see it. This is picked up by Neon, which is James Shapiro's and Tim League's new label, because Draft House Films is basically no more. It's now Neon, which they've had Colossal come out, and then Ingrid Goes West, and they got a few others coming. I think Beach Rats is another one, and then they have Gemini coming out. Gemini is such a good and beautiful film. But every once in a while you watch a movie where the movie can be destroyed by the third act. I was so on board with this film. The characters are tracks great. It looks beautiful. It gets really suspenseful because an event happens. I'm not going to say because if I say the plot, if you read the plot and then you know what I'm going to say at the end, then you're going to figure it out. So I'm not going to give any spoilers. This is all spoiler free.
Okay, tread lightly.
Aside from Maniac Cop 2. But you should have seen it by now.
It's past the point of I can't think of
the word. It's point of no return, I guess. I don't know. I don't know.
I was gonna like try to say like some smart word and then I couldn't think of it, then I was like, fuck it.
Gemini I really loved, but the film felt like it turned into this kind of like young adult television show. You know, when the film could have got dark, it didn't. And then you just realized once the plot unfolds and you know what's actually happening, you're like, wait, that's actually not possible. Like, that wouldn't be that. I can't buy into that because that wouldn't happen. You know, you can give your suspension of disbelief in films, but you need to start that shit in the beginning. And that's my argument with people during the fest. They're like, oh, you could do that. And I was like, no. I was like, if you're watching Citizen Kane or, you know, Psycho, let's pick some of the greats. And then all of a sudden, dead rabbits rose from the grave with laser beams, killed everybody. No, you can't just watch a movie and something like that happen and then just, no, I'm not saying dead rabbits rise from the grave in fucking Gemini.
I thought it was no spoilers, bro.
It did happen in the movie Magnolia, where, you know, all of a sudden, spoiler alert for Magnolia, it rains frogs.
But they hint at that, and that's biblical, and that makes sense. Okay. But you just can't have something totally out of the blue happen that goes against, like, you know, what you know and what you believe. And, like, you just can't – you can't do that. We don't live in a belief.
Just trying to make sure we're qualifying your statement, that's all.
Yeah, it's just I hate when movies do that. They, like, drag you in and then, you know, like, people – I'm not going to say anything else. But anyways, watch Gemini. It's fine. So this movie apparently is on VOD. Highly suggest you check it out. For films like Stand By Me, you know, The Goonies, this has a feel like that. It's called Super Dark Times. It's about four friends that are, you know, somewhat buddy-buddy. An event happens between them. A very, very bad event. And it kind of all goes downhill from there. But it's like set in the 90s. It has, you know, a really good score. It's really intense. It reminds you being a kid at times and also makes you think, oh my God, kids are actually probably like this.
What's the name of the film?
It's called Super Dark Times. But I think it's on VOD as of now. Select theaters, but it looks great. It's really intense. Definitely in my top 10. If you like movies about kids and drama, like hard drama, even to the point where it's horror, like this is for you. It's a really great film. So next up, and this almost took my number one, but it didn't. So it's my number two. So everybody knows, I've talked on this podcast a billion times about Asylum Blackout, one of my favorite movies of all time. Craig Zellier wrote it. I forget who directed it, but Craig Zellier is such a fascinating writer. So I was really excited last year or the year before when Bone Tomahawk was coming out, because that's something else he wrote, and he actually got to be in the director's seat on that. Bone Tomahawk was in my top 10. I loved it. Such a great script, really brutal, really intense. So I was really excited that he has a new film out called Brawl in Cell Block 99, which then they hinted at the casting when they were behind this, you know, about to start, and they said Vince Vaughn's the lead. And I was like, what? Excuse me? Vince Vaughn? Like Swingers? Maid? Like, I don't like Vince Vaughn.
He's growed up.
I like Swingers and Maid, but anything else that he's done, I just don't like. He just is this awful comedic actor.
I liked him in Old School as the dad trying to run the, you know.
Yeah.
Electronic store.
It was Speaker City.
Speaker City.
Old School's fine. Whatever. Yeah. So,
sorry, continue.
Vince, Vince Vaughn plays the lead in Cell Block, Brawl in Cell Block 99. And I tell you, man, he is fucking great. He is one big motherfucker. He towers over people. This dude was there. He's tall in real life, like towers over people. Got broad shoulders, and he is a mean motherfucker. So Brawl in Cell Block 99 is awesome. It has a great script as well. It has great characters. It has plenty of exposition in order to get to what, you know, because I feel like people are like, oh, we just want a movie about fighting. It's a Brawl in Cell Block 99. Well, in order to care about any of these characters, you got to feed me something, because I'm not going to watch a fucking action movie and not care about anybody. You know, I don't like that. I like to at least feel what they're fighting for. So Brawl in Cell Block 99, spoiler free, little spoilery, but spoiler free for the most part. So he is down on his luck. He's got some heavy shit in the background happening with him. Vince Vaughn's character, he gets laid off. He needs to fix his life and fast. So he mentions to his wife he wants to get back in the business of kind of running stuff, whether it's drugs, guns, whatever. But he's very responsible about it in a way. You know, obviously, if you're doing that, you're not too responsible. But he needs the money. He wants to raise a family. So he goes out and does this for a couple years, makes a good living. And then his boss pairs him up with these kind of no-namers. Deal kind of goes sour. He is put in jail. And then he is visited by Udo Kier, which is a great role for him. Udo Kier comes to him and says, "We know what you did. We have your wife. We need you to kill somebody in this other prison that's like, you know, miles and miles, miles down the road." And Vince Vaughn's like, "How the fuck am I supposed to do that?" And they said, you know, "Be creative." So in order to get to this maximum, like he's in a minimum security prison. He needs to get to the fucking hole, like complete darkness where you sleep in your own shit. So in order to do that, it becomes a video game of him battling his way, trying to get in enough trouble and kick enough ass that he's put in Cell Block 99. And holy shit, man, fucking Vince Vaughn wrecks some motherfuckers. There's some fucking fantastic fucking battle scenes in this, but it's real. It's real. Like if you're expecting like fucking The Raid, you're not going to get it. This is like legit hand-to-hand combat. If you watch some motherfuckers duke it out before, like in real life or, you know, boxing, that's what this is like. We're not doing kung fu and flipping through the air and, you know, fighting 30 people. No, we're doing one-on-one, put your hands up, and I'm going to pound your face in. It's fucking good. Oh, my God. It's so good.
Oh, I'm sold, but I just want to know, is he better in this or is Norman Bates?
Oh, God. No. He's born to be in this Brawl in Cell Block 99. Vince Vaughn is a good action star, I can say. He's charismatic. He's believable. He also is just good at what he does, which I was very, very surprised that I liked Vince Vaughn as much as I did. Not that I'm on a hate Vince Vaughn train. It's just he's a
He's
an awful comedic actor, I think. He had a couple hits with John Favreau with Maid and Swingers. But other than that, he hasn't really done anything that has stood out that's good. Yeah. That was that. RLJ picked it up. You should be able to see it hopefully next year.
It'll be on DVD in your local Walmart.
So now we're going to get Blu-ray. A little bit of drama again. So they had a secret screening. AGFA had a secret screening at Fantastic Fest. In the description for the film, it is written that this film is for gut-dwelling perverts.
What?
So it gave you a little inclination that we're not going to be watching any fucking My Little Pony movie. We're going to be watching something that is probably has nudity and sex. All right? So Joe... you know, Zimbia came out Something Weird. Man, I forgot her name. It's the wife of the guy that passed away from Something Weird. Lorraine? I can't remember her name. Shit. So anyways, she was there. The secret screening was this Ed Wood movie. I'll repeat, Ed Wood, the guy that made Plan 9 from Outer Space, Ed Wood. It is a film that he made on his own, without any studio or anybody, any producers speaking to him. He made this film called Take It Out to Trade, and it was never screened ever aside from this bar, basically, this titty bar. After they filmed it, he screened it once, like on the wall of this bar. And that's the only time it was ever seen. Well, they got the print, they got it, boom, here it is. So Ed Wood made this sexploitation film, not a hardcore porno, which was later, this movie was said that Fantastic Fest screened a violent, the words that were said were violent porno.
Gotta get them clicks.
Unaware of.
Gotta get them clicks, son.
I'll tell you right now, there's no violence in this movie because it is a fucking Ed Wood movie, number one. And number two, when we're talking about cinema, this is known as a station film. If you know anything about cinema, certain people that posted online repeatedly that this is a porno, it is not a porno when we're talking about cinema. There's no penetration. There's no erect penises. There's no really sex in the film other than people bumping with each other, but there's no insertion. We watched this fun sexploitation film that is actually gender positive because Ed Wood wanted to be a woman, and he plays a woman in this, an old woman. There is gay and lesbian couples in this film. There's nothing violent about it. The only violence that you're talking about for people that posted that is that the detective actually goes to a house at one point, and there's these two drug addicts, and he's trying to get some information out of this lady. So he like picks her up and shakes her a tiny bit and then puts her on the bed, and she cries, and he slaps her for stop crying. So if that's the violent porno to you, you have some growing up to do. So anyways, they showed this quirky sexploitation film from Ed Wood that most people would love to see just because it is a lost time capsule.
Yeah, hands up.
So the film is not violent in any nature. There is no pornography in the film other than some boobies and some, you know, you see some vaginas, but there's no penetration. There's nothing like that. It's not dirty in the slightest. It's just weird. And it's honestly quite boring, but it's fun to watch this Ed Wood movie that no one else has really seen. So that's the film that we watched. During the Q&A, someone asked, Joe, what are you doing in order to make Fantastic Fest a safer place for females? Which I thought, man, this is not the right person to ask, because Joe Zimbia really doesn't have any ties to the Draft House. He programs Terror Tuesday, helps out with Weird Wednesday. He works for AGFA. Like, he's not the person to ask. So Joe politely said, do you mean Fantastic Fest? And the guy said, you know, yes, in general, what are you doing to make it safer for women? And Joe said, I am not at liberty to discuss that up here because this is the Q&A for the film. We should be talking about the movie, but I would be more than happy to speak with you after the film, after this Q&A is over, I'll speak with you in the hallway. So the guy said again, why can't you talk about it now? And Joe said again, he said, well, this isn't really the right place. And he said, when is the right place? This is the right place. And so, the wife of, man, I feel bad for forgetting her name. So she spoke up. She said, listen, she's like, I've been around these movies all my life. She's like, I'm a feminist. I believe in art. This is, an art, basically art from Ed Wood. I don't feel that this is inappropriate, you know, with the recent allegations that are brought up. You know, I don't feel that this is an inappropriate film to play, blah, blah, blah. You know, just spoke on behalf of film and Something Weird and how AGFA rescued this film. And, you know, she feels that this is an important time capsule. This isn't, you know, a statement or anything that's wrong to be shown in at the Alamo Drafthouse, given the recent light of certain things that have happened. Well, of course, the guy did not. I don't know who it was. We all tried to figure it out. I had no idea who this dude was. I asked plenty of people. He bolted. He didn't stay for Joe. Joe actually stood there, waited for him. And then immediately I tweeted exactly what happened because I knew that this was going to blow up, and it did, because Tim Doyle, who was fired basically, oops, shouldn't be saying that, fired, who used to do Mondo Prince, was fired from Draft House. So he's got some beef going. Also, this is where Todd Brown took my, tweet out of context, and they both repeatedly said violent porno. This is a trigger warning. This is what Fantastic Fest did. Neither of those two guys were there. The people that they were getting the information from weren't in the theater, because the people that were in the other, like, this screened on four theaters. I was actually in the theater with this. They simulcast in other theaters during Q&As. I was actually in the theater. So the people that were in the other theaters didn't hear the question because Joe didn't repeat it, because he simply answered back to the guy. And nothing that this guy said or Joe said was out of – or anything that Joe said was out of line. Joe just can't speak on behalf of it. He's not the person to ask. If you want to talk to somebody, Carrie League is out there, and also Kristen Bell is out there waiting for people to talk to. So it was very inappropriate for him to ask the question. And what I said was that, you know, they're not avoiding these conversations. They're just not talking to people out loud as far as a voice for the Draft House is what I was saying, which was blown out of context, of course. It made me sound like I was contradicting myself. They want to talk about it, but they don't. Well, that's not the case. Everybody's talking about it. It's just that they don't represent the Draft House, so they don't have a right to say what is changing. Joe doesn't fucking know either. So it was just really stupid that it was blown up to something like that. And then all these articles came out about how people were scared to get up out of the theater, that men were trying to conceal their boners in the theater. Like, this woman was scared because the two guys were so fidgety trying to hide their boners. No one got a boner in this movie. There's nothing to get erect over. You can leave the theater at any time. People walk out constantly at Fantastic Fest during movies. You're not trapped there. People said they're trapped because once you order food, you can't leave. No, that's not true. That's not how the Draft House works. You put up an order card, ask for your bill early, or you get up and you go, say, and all you're in a numbered section. You say, hey, I'm in 1026. I need my bill. I'm leaving. It's very easy to get up from a theater. I've never walked out of a movie before. Well, I've walked out of one movie at Fantastic Fest. But you're not trapped there. So don't make it. And this goes in behalf of what I was going to say. And this, I'm not attacking anybody. I'm not making judgment, but this is how I feel. If you didn't go to Fantastic Fest, that's fine. I'm not attacking you in the slightest. But when they got done for the night or for the Fantastic Fest, there was only four badges that weren't picked up. Four. I've heard numerous people say that they weren't going, and other people that just said they weren't going who actually never intended on going. Don't make it about you. Stop making it about you. Stop making it your problem, because the problem is what we talked about in the beginning of the show. Stop trying to put things on you, like these dudes that said, well, I'm not going to Fantastic Fest. Bitch, you weren't going to begin with. So don't try to make this about you. Don't try to show that you're puffing up your chest, making a statement when you weren't going to begin with. Like, I hate that. I hate when people try to turn these things into likes and, you know, retweets and clicks on articles because this is how they feel. Because, like, I don't buy that.
Yeah.
If you're going to make a statement, try to be positive in trying – In the sense of standing behind women or something that you're doing positively in that sense. Don't try to make these little things about you. I don't believe in that. You know, if you weren't going, like Scott Weinberg didn't go to Fantastic Fest for obvious reasons. I give Scott all the props. I miss them a bunch. The feud wasn't the same without him. Like, I respect his stance. But Scott also didn't make it about him. He just said, this sucks. I'm not going. I can't bring myself to do it.
Yeah.
And that's it.
The only other person I saw saying that, I mean, she just didn't go and it wasn't a big to do. It was just, I can't bring myself to go. That's it. You know?
Yeah, you know, I've had a couple people, and, you know, I imagine their badges were still there. That's fine. But, you know, there is a lot more people that just jumped on this bandwagon of hating people that went.
Yeah.
And, you know, talking down to people that were going.
That's destructive. That's not helping anything.
Yeah, and it's like you're not helping anything. You're almost like you're trying to focus this towards you, and we need to focus on the real issue. And I just feel it's a shitty way to do it. I don't know if they're doing it on – I don't think they're doing it on purpose, but you need to be aware of what you say and what you're doing, because honestly, I don't give a fuck if you didn't come to Fantastic Fest. Fine, whatever. You know, if you have your reasons, like Weinberg and, you know, a couple other women that I spoke to that didn't go because they didn't feel comfortable, I respect that. But if you make it a fucking thread, or, you know, the big fucking exit that Todd Brown did numerous times on Facebook, just attacking everything. No. Like, when Todd Brown stepped down, I was like, okay, I respect that. But then he just kept on and then saying things that weren't true, like violent porno, that just want to sit at home and watch things burn, which is not constructive at all. So anyways,
yeah.
Next up, go ahead, Steph.
No, I was just going to say I can't speak to Todd Brown, and I don't know the guy who spoke up at the screening, but there are some people who it doesn't seem like they're trying to help. They just want to score points. Whenever something big like this happens, they just try to sloppily score points, and that hurts.
Yeah, it's like, look at me. I asked this question at a screening. Okay, well, if Tim League would have been introducing the movie, maybe that would have been a good time to approach him. Maybe outside you would have talked to Carrie or Kristen. That probably would have been a good question. Say, hey, you know, you're screening this movie like this. You know, what's up? That's fine. Whatever. But to publicly do that like that to try to start a fire, you're not helping anything. You're actually kind of trolling, which is what you're not supposed to do.
There are enough real terrible issues that we actually need to address that people just kind of doing a shotgun approach like that adds no value.
Yeah, I agree. So back to the films. Here we go. Sorry for that tangent again, but it needed to be said. Next up was Tiger Girl. I believe this was another, was this a German film? Man, I forgot all these countries for some reason. But anyways, Tiger Girl, let's see.
Germany.
Okay. I was going to say Germany. All right. So, Tiger Girl is, has, the sister, the older sister in Raw. She plays the lead in this. She plays Tiger Girl, about, a girl named Vanilla. You never found out her real name. They just call her Vanilla. She's like this training security guard comes across this girl named Tiger who just likes to cause trouble and mischief and just, you know, bother people and it kind of be a little destructive, but not really hurt anybody. So it's kind of like getting her to, you know, Vanilla to act out and do these crazy things. They get a fairly decent relationship. But it's one of those films, again, where it's just that third act just kind of, I don't know, knocks it down a little bit. It's an okay movie. It's got some good characters and some good chemistry between Vanilla and Tiger Girl. But make up your own mind. Next up was Aaron Moorhead and Justin Benson's The Endless, which is their follow-up from Spring, who also did Bone Storm before that on the VHS segment, which is the only good VHS 3 segment there is. And then before that, they had Resolution. So we had Benson and Moorhead on the show, talked about Spring, really enjoyed that film quite a bit. A beautiful, horrific love story. I was always a huge fan of Resolution. So next up is their film called The Endless, about two brothers who ran away from a cult in their teens. And like 10 years later, they get a mysterious videotape and they want to go back to see what's going on. And they do. And there you have the plot of the film. I'm not speaking on behalf of the film anymore because I don't want to give any spoilers, except that if you do watch The Endless, which I think this needs to be said, if you do watch The Endless, make sure you watch Resolution first, if that's any hints. So big awesomeness surrounds The Endless. Next up was one of my – this movie was a fucking blast. The most fun I've ever had at Fantastic Fest.
Wow.
During a screening. They played a movie called Mom and Dad that stars Selma Blair and Nicolas Cage. In this film, there is something – with the parents. So anytime during a crisis or anything, you feel like you need to protect your children and be there. So you'll do anything to be with them, to protect them. Well, in this sense, they just want to kill their kids. So all the parents around the world just want to kill their children. And it's about these two kids that are trying to survive Mom and Dad, who are Nicolas Cage and Selma Blair, trying to murder them. Oh my God, this movie is so much fucking fun. It's absurd. Nicolas Cage's best performance to date. He's insane. He's firing on fucking 18 fucking cylinders in this film. Well,
Crazy Cage is always the best Cage.
But Crazy Cage, like, Crazy Cage in a movie that doesn't want Crazy Cage doesn't work for me.
Brad, write a movie called Crazy Cage, by the way, please.
But Crazy Cage in a movie where they need Crazy Cage works.
Yeah.
So Nicolas Cage is playing Nicolas Cage in Mom and Dad, and it's fucking beautiful. And they actually play a song by The Prodigy, which you don't really hear them too often. That's one of my favorite bands growing up as a kid. They play a song by The Prodigy. I thought that was pretty cool. This is actually directed by Brian Taylor, who is part of the team of Neville Dean and Taylor, who directed Crank 2, that awful gamer movie. And I think they worked on the Ghost Rider films together. So if that is any inclination of how crazy Mom and Dad can get, there's your answer.
Yes,
but apparently it's just Brian Taylor now. Apparently they split up as partners, but looks like Taylor might be the good one here. and next up was, people are going to go apeshit over this movie. I kid you not. Watch how this movie fucking dominates the indie film community. It's called Anna and the Apocalypse. It is a Christmas horror comedy zombie musical that that's it. And it's cute. I have my little issues with it, but I'm not going to nitpick at anything. But it's very cute. It's funny. It's cool to see a Christmas horror film, zombie comedy musical with a bunch of teens trying to survive the night in their local town while the world is being overrun by zombies. So it's going to be a big hit. Just wait. Next up, it's a shame that, I've seen a lot of these Netflix produced films at South By and at Fantastic Fest. Usually they're really small little films. Well, this was Frank Grillo and Wheelman. This movie deserves to be on the big screen. It sucks that you're not going to be able to see it in theaters. It comes, I think, on Netflix October 20th. You guys see Locke by chance with Tom Hardy?
I haven't.
Not yet.
Sean?
Not yet.
All right, so Locke is a really great movie. I highly suggest you watch it. Tom Hardy, but the whole film's in a fucking car. It never leaves the car. It's just him having these conversations in his car, and it's really intense, but it's just a guy living his day out, just dealing with a bunch of shit. Well, Wheelman is an action lock where he plays the wheelman for these bad people, and he's caught up in some shit, and he drives a car really fast and is in some deep motherfucking shit. And Fran Grillo is awesome. It's produced by Joe Carnahan, it's not written by Joe Carnahan, but anyways, he produced it because Fran Grillo and Carnahan are making a lot of films together. They're remaking The Raid together, apparently. So, Wheelman, a great action flick with being set entirely in and around a car and never leaves the car. It's pretty great. Next up was the secret screening for Fantastic Fest. Everybody had their everybody thought it was going to be Shape of Water. Everybody thought it was going to be – most people thought it was going to be Death Wish, Eli Roth's Death Wish. So I was, like, really nervous because, honestly, I kind of wanted to see Shape of Water. I didn't want to see Death Wish unless I was sitting with a bunch of friends and we were just fucking hammered. But – it came out, and it was The Death of Stalin, which I had no idea what this movie was when the title came up. I said, are we going to watch a fucking period piece drama? Because I'm getting the fuck up right now. So I was like, all right, I'm going to give this a second. I have no idea what this was. And no one really clapped because I think it caught everybody surprised because I don't think they knew what it was. So this guy who directed it did a movie called In the Loop, which a lot of people love, and then the TV show with Anna Chumsky called Veep. So a lot of people like those two things. This movie is a comedy about the rise, the quick rise of Stalin and the fall of Stalin after he died, about his administration, what they did and how they did it, but in the most comical way possible in this dark tale of what really happened. Like, terrifying and awful things happening during this time, but somehow they manage it to be really fucking funny.
My dad is already sold on this movie.
Yeah, Steve Buscemi's the lead in it, and he is fucking hysterical. Everything about the movie is very comical, but it's also really scary, like, what was actually happening. Like, it's a truth of a part of history, but told in a very comical way. But a nice little surprise during Fantastic Fest. I don't know when that's being released, but IFC picked it up. So expect it on a DVD only in probably about 3 years.
Big of a role does Jason Isaacs have?
Huh?
How big of a role does Jason Isaacs have?
He has a smaller role, but he, like everybody was saying, we want our own spinoff. The fucking Jason Isaacs character. He's so fucking good when he's on screen.
Nice.
He's a great actor in general.
Yeah.
So next up was Thelma. It's a very supernatural coming-of-age tale about a woman that discovers that she knows that she has certain capabilities and is dealing with life and a friendship that turns to love with another female. It's okay. It didn't grab me, but a lot of people loved it. I'm going to have to watch it again because maybe I missed something. Next up was one of my top 10. Takeshi Miike has made 100 films to date. This is his 100th film called Blade of the Immortal. It's a 2-hour-and-15-minute samurai film where Miike uses the seriousness like he did in 13 Assassins and Harakiri remake. He blends that with kind of his Miike flair of really wacky shit, at times very subtle, about not a ronin, but a samurai who loses his sister by these like ruthless like shogun. It's the opening scene of the film. He takes on like 5,000 people and just slaughters everybody in order to avenge his sister. Dies in the process. This is in the first 10 minutes of the film, so it's nothing. This is the plot of the film. Oh. So he is given immortality by this witch. So he lives his life out as Blade of the Immortal. Walking through Japan, feudal Japan. Now our story centers around this little girl who her father, who is the leader of this samurai, is murdered by these other ruthless shoguns that are trying to take over Japan. So her father's lost in the process, so she wants to avenge her father. So she finds this known assassin that walks, that is a hired mercenary, who is our character in the very beginning. And she offers to pay him if he teaches her how to fight and kill these people that killed her father. And this is a big gang of fucking motherfuckers. Big gang. And so the film is this little girl and our lead character, Blade of the Immortal, who finds and kills everything in his path. It is fucking bloody as hell. It's a great fucking samurai film. So, and a great soundtrack too. So go see that. Next up was Pincushion. It's a movie that exists. You can see it eventually. Next up was Revenge. It felt that Revenge from, I didn't see it the opening or the first night, but I had a bunch of people come up to me and say, Brad, this movie is made for you. And usually when my friends say that, I trust them, and you're usually right. So Revenge is a rape revenge movie that is told in this Western kind of style, where this basically it's a rape revenge tale, but it's not rapey like that in the slightest. There's just a quick scene that's there, and you know it's done. So it's not really graphic or anything like that, which you know people were like a little leery about playing, I guess, at Fantastic Fest. But it tries to be as tasteful as possible, I guess you could say, which is weird to say. But anyways, rape revenge movie about a girl that just, you know, is left for dead, who comes back and tries to kill the people that wronged her. It's a movie that exists. It will be on Shudder. You can watch it. Let me know what you think. I, however, was not a fan of this movie. It has a great soundtrack. But I thought everything that was happening and unfolding in the film was just a little over the top and silly. Next up, we watched The Gate on 35, which was great. Go see watch The Gate on Blu-ray from Lionsgate. Great film, but it was fun to see. They actually pulled 100 best kills for this screening because maybe they thought 100 best kills for kids. They were going to kill kids in this one. So I think maybe they thought that was pushing the envelope too far after watching The Gate. It was fun. Next up, I watched a movie called Mouse. It's a movie that exists. Next up, I watch Les Affaires, which means The Hungry. It's a French-Canadian film. One of my favorites. It is a simple movie, which I think that people didn't like it because it was so simple. It was about it's a tale of survival during the zombie apocalypse. They're not trying to find a cure. They're not trying to get point A to point B. It's just a bunch of strangers banding together in order to survive, and they don't know what they're going to do, which I thought was unique. Because you don't never see that. It's like finding a cure, trying to get to the safe place, you know, running into a bunch of ruthless people that want to, you know, fucking rape and murder everybody. But it didn't go any route like that. It was basically banding together and trying to survive. And what was surprising that a lot of people weren't talking about is there's a lot of women in the film that are just killing fucking zombies. Which was a little weird to see that we have like one male and then all the rest are female. So it's mainly female dominant in this tale of survival. And it's all ages. Like they have like a 12-year-old little girl. They have like, you know, kind of a stay-at-home mom character. They have like this big businesswoman character. Then they have these two elderly women who are you can kind of tell that they're lovers, but they never really go on that fact. But they're like, you know, 60 and surviving, you know, and they're kind of like well off and have their shit together with their guns and food. Yeah, it's just this really beautiful kind of zombie apocalypse, terrifying, bloody movie about a tale of survival. And man, there's a line in the film that I just fucking burst into tears with. Oh my God, it's so fucking good. So I think Shudder picked this up. So hopefully we'll be able to see it soon. Yeah, it's really great. Next up was Five Fingers of Marseille, which is about these five children who live in South Africa, who kind of live in well, they live in South Africa, so it's not like this greatest landscape and greatest living quarters. But it's just them being friends and causing a little bit of mischief. Something, the military is involved, something goes wrong, and they all kind of split. And then years and years later, they come back to the town and realize what's happening, so they try to overthrow it. And it's this Western tale, but it's like, it's weird because it's got this weird, like, John Carpenter vibe, which people weren't talking about. Maybe it's just me. This weird John Carpenter vibe with like this Mad Maxian like characters. Like, it's in, you know, the fucking ruins of fucking South Africa. So the, like, some of these cars and these people are like decked out like Mad Max type shit. And it's about these five brothers, or they're not brothers, they're brothers by, you know, brotherhood, who eventually, you know, are tired and want to kind of overthrow. And everybody has kind of went their own way, doing their own thing. Some are, you know, still really good at heart. Others, not so much. But they put up a fight. And it's a pretty good film. I enjoyed it quite a bit. Next up was Darkland, A Tale of Revenge. It's okay. It's a wealthy businessman who finds out his little brother's killed by these drug dealers. So he gets a bunch of, like, you know, ballistic gear and goes after these guys. It's okay. It's not as eventful as you may think it would be. Next up was a Korean film called VIP. It was it's written by the screenwriter of I Saw the Devil, which I had big high hopes for. It's okay. It's basically a serial killer that's being hunted by this cop who doesn't really care about his badge, and he just wants to hunt him down and stop him. And it's really brutal at times. You know, this guy kills like entire families and tortures people and stuff like that, but it's okay. It has some really good moments. Next up was Mon Monsters. I think it was Chinese, maybe.
That's the title. Can't think.
Huh?
That's the title?
Yeah, it's called Mon Monsters. Like, if you're stuttering.
Okay, got it.
So
I'm trying to keep track of all these. It's a Taiwan film.
Oh, it's from Taiwan. Okay, that's why I get these mixed up. All these different countries. I feel bad. I'm not racist, I promise. I kept doing that, like, at Fantastic Fest. I was like, I think it's the Chinese movie. And they're like, there's no movie, like, that's not from China. That's from Taiwan. And I was like,
I did that with, when I was talking about, like, the whole, that lame Great Wall movie, I kept thinking it was a Japanese film, but it was, in fact, a Chinese film.
Yeah. I'm not.
We're only
not
human, folks.
Yeah, it's so many. I can't, if it does you any, like, I can't remember where the other, where these other movies are from either. So that just tells you.
I got your back. IMDb's got your back.
Thanks. So, yeah, Mon Monsters is, it was an odd movie because I thought it was like kind of a comedy, but it's not at all. It's about this mother and daughter of these, they're monsters, these creatures that are very, you know, they look human, but they've got like really sharp teeth and fingernails and they eat everybody. And it's these punk ass kids who capture the little one and they torture her. And this monster has killed many people, but we get this sense of, you know, empathy, and we feel bad for this monster who has obviously murdered a lot of people, but is being tortured by these punk ass kids who just want to cause trouble. And then they find out the mother is looking for her kin. So the other monster goes on a murderous rampage trying to find out where this girl is.
I was almost going to think it was French because mon is my in French.
Mm.
Like my monster.
So this monster is on a murderous rampage trying to find her kin. And the other kids know that this is actually happening. So they try to lure her in into this trap. So the film is very, very, very mean. It's mean-spirited all around. It's decent, but I tell you, it's one of those movies where the third act just kills. Like, it's so, so good. It's just, it's so powerful and just so mean and so fucked up that it works. Like, this movie's not fun in the slightest. It's just very dark and dreadful, and just dreadful in the sense of dread. It's just, like, mean, like, it makes you really question humanity, which is kind of cool, you know. And not too many movies make you, like, obviously we're really connected to these monsters over the sense of just family, and, you know, they're monsters and they're killing people, but it's still a mother and daughter. It's just really fascinating how we can love and feel for something so terrifying and terrible, that there's something worse than monsters, that we are the real monsters rather than these things. So I thought that was pretty clever in order to do that in a film. So I suggest you watch it. It's pretty cool. So next up was it's kind of a downer, I know. So other films that I saw, there was Dan Dream, which is from the filmmakers of Clown, about a true story about an electric car. The movie is absolutely hilarious, one of the funniest movies I've ever seen. If you've seen Clown, it's not as crude and vulgar as that, but it's just really funny. These guys know what they're doing as far as just, like, such great situational comedy, and lots of great callbacks. Just a really great comedy, which I don't really see that we got a lot of those.
Clown with a K, right? Not the John Watts, Eli Roth.
No, not the John Watts movie.
Clown with a K. Director Jesper Raffelt.
Yeah, it's spelled like Cloven, K-L-O-V-E-N. It's actually based, like, on a television show from Denmark.
It's spelled like Cloven?
And they spawned two sequels, or two films, and then now they have Dan Dream.
Nice.
Next up was this movie blew me away. This was a student film, which I sat in the theater, and then they said, this is a student film. And I was like, oh boy, I don't know if I can do this. It was like 7 o'clock at night. And I was like, student film at fucking 7 o'clock at night. I was like, I didn't know much about the film. I heard there was hardly any dialogue. It was like mostly silent. And I was like, man, this just does not feel like it's my bag. Like, it's going to be like way too pretentious and just like, you know, just not good. But man, this movie was incredible. It's going to be kind of how The Witch really hit people. It's equivalent to that. It's called Hagazusa. It's the most black
Hagazusa. Huh?
It means like mountain hag or something like that. But it's Hagazusa.
Okay, found it. I just want to make sure I'm capturing all these for the show notes.
Like, yeah.
Nice. The poster is badass.
Yeah, it's very black metal.
Yes.
But yeah, the whole film is very black metal. It was really funny because I tweeted about Hagazusa because I was blown away by it. It's incredible to believe that it's a student film because it's so accomplished. Like, it's way better than most of the stuff that's out there. It has a great score. It has great, wonderful imagery. And I was going to say is that I tweeted about, you know, being so black metal, and then the director's brother said, this is what happens when your little brother, steals your black metal tapes at age 4. and it's quite apparent. Like, you know, you can see that these films this film is just so dark. And you know, if you listen to black metal or know anything about black metal, the imagery that goes in and the sound and the lyrics, they're just really dark and hateful. And that's kind of where this it's about a witch who is pregnant. And it's really horrifying, and it's really great. It's such a beautiful film too. It's honestly stunning, and I still have a hard time. And they filmed it over 4-year period too, which is a 4-year period student film. You would just, hey, I have the student film. It took me 4 years to film, and I filmed it right after college. I would say I have no interest in your movie whatsoever. Without actually seeing it. I'm sorry. I'm a dick, but that's just how I would be like, no. That does not sound like something that's going to be good.
Yeah. I had the same thing when I used to work for bands. We would tour around. We would always get like these guys demos, you know, we made this throughout high school, like listen to our demo. And we would just, we called it Roadside Records. And as we left, we were dicks. We would, as we got to the highway, we would chuck them out the bus window.
Nice to know you guys support new artists. That's just, I'm glad this is on record.
Well, hey, I'm always going to support new artists, but when it sounds like your movie went through hell trying to make 4 years to make it, and a student film, honestly, that just does not appeal to me. Like, I'll eventually watch it, but I'm not going to be super gung ho about it. But it's tough to believe that all those cases were true for this film. Because out of all the films at Fantastic Fest, this is like the most accomplished, well-made film. Yeah. Other than probably Let the Corpses Tan.
Wow.
So other films that I saw was a film called Love and Saucers. A very short film documentary about a guy who believes that he's had sex with aliens numerous times. And is a known artist of drawing these things. And he believes that there's like a praying mantis king or something like that. It's wacky and it's not very fun. Next up was Jailbreak. I can't remember. I'm not even going to say the country from this. Jailbreak is like, I'm going to talk about this film and beef it up so bad. And then I'm going to hit you with something. So, Jailbreak is like Smoking Aces meets The Raid. So basically a VIP is in prison. They have to escort out. Prisoners are set free because these different gangs want his head. So they release all the prisoners, and these cops have to fight their way out of this prison while protecting this guy. The film is super tame, though, I feel. Like, it's just a bunch of hand slapping. It's not hard hitting, very tame. And honestly, it's quite boring for an action movie with a plot like that. So whatever. Next up was Juvenile, which apparently is written from one of the guys from Glee, I guess. I don't know. It just didn't expect something that you know, I'd never watched Glee, but it's apparently this like drug drama. It's okay. It has its moments. It was just one of those films where I was really digging it, but it was kind of like that. They didn't know where to go with it. So they just kind of end it. And that can hurt a movie pretty bad. So I was not too happy with that. And then Let's see. My last film, I think the last thing that I saw was 1%. Yeah, I think that's it. So I saw a movie called 1%. It's an Australian film about bikers. It's okay. I dug it for what it was, but apparently a lot of people hated it because they said this movie is like a Sons of Anarchy episode. And everybody said it is basically a Sons of Anarchy episode. I've never seen Sons of Anarchy. So I was like, whatever. But yeah, it's just very, very tame. You know, being bikers, you expect a little bit more brutality, but it's just, they're just there. Like even the shootouts are just kind of blah.
Yeah.
But anyways,
I've never seen Sons of Anarchy. I have no idea.
But, yeah.
Wow. Right on. How many movies was that?
I don't know. I saw almost 40, I think.
And I don't think you covered 40. So there's ones you haven't even covered.
Well, no, I almost 40, I guess. I don't know. I think I maybe saw 35, 37,
damn,
something like that.
Wow. What was the, your favorite place you ate at?
Dude, it sucked this year. Cause there was, most of the place, like you don't really get here. Is that historically Fantastic Fest? There's like 2 hour breaks between films. This year, the programming was so great in the time that you only had about 45 minutes between movies. Good. The movies didn't run as late, and they didn't, you know, they started earlier this year, but they didn't run as late. But the time gaps, the most I ever had was like an hour and 15 minutes.
Okay, so you had to stay close
most
by.
Of the places, yeah, most of the places closed down, honestly, which was weird. A lot of the restaurants nearby. So I only had a couple places I could eat. But mostly I had to stick to Draft House food because I didn't have a choice. But I ate light. I didn't eat a lot. I kind of starved myself.
Apparently John Barkham.
Barkham.
Barkham. He maintained his goal. He didn't gain any weight. Which I remember he was saying he was all worried that he'd gain weight.
Yeah. You could play it safe, especially when it comes to Draft House food, because I don't really like to eat a lot of it because I don't like the grease they cook their shit in. So I ate pretty light. I only ate like maybe twice a day, if gotcha. That. So right, I was trying to be very careful.
Damn. All right. Well, there we go, man. We got through them all. Good job.
You guys need to come next time.
I know. I need to make it work. Totally. All right. Any final words from anybody?
Yeah, nothing too much. I mean, I know there's a lot of people saying that Fantastic Fest won't be Fantastic Fest next year.
No, I think there's too many people involved for it to really go away.
Fantastic Fest is bigger than Tim.
Yeah.
So even if he steps back from it, people are still going to continue Fantastic Fest. It might not all be at the Draft House. You know, because there's plenty of theaters around, kind of like what they do for South by Southwest, where it's like 8 theaters around town. But I don't know. I don't know what the future holds for Fantastic Fest. I have no idea. I just hope it does continue with the right group of people that, you know, is kind of given to the people that actually do the work. You know, Tim's the face of Fantastic Fest, but I really think it needs to be handed over to Kristen Bell, not the actress. And, you know, they have a solid programming team. And I think, you know, with Evram, leading it, they have, you know, I think they have four guys, 2 girls. You know, I think they do a killer job of programming. I think they can really make, this is a stepping stone to making the film community better. I think overturning these stones is going to be significant change and spark change, which I'm looking forward to. And I'm really looking forward to next Fantastic Fest to see if that momentum keeps up and in this kind of, like I said, turning over rocks continues. So that way we can have a safe and comfortable time for everybody, especially women. And, you know, I think that would be killer. Like I said, it's changed a lot from 8 years, and I hope to continue to see change. So
awesome.
Is the woman from Something Weird Lisa?
Yes.
Okay. Just wanted to make sure we got her name on.
Yeah, yeah, Lisa. That's her name. I said Lorraine, I think, but yeah. So yeah, Lisa's a great person, and she does a lot of work to keep cinema alive.
Very cool. All right, well, that's gonna do it for this week's episode. I want to thank all you guys for listening. Please check out our sponsors. Go to thescreamcast.com/sponsors. You can check out Vinegar Syndrome there. Coffee Shop of Horrors. You can get 10% off your order if you use the coupon code Screamcast. Grindhousevideo.com. I know he's been moving and the whole hurricane stuff. He wasn't affected too much, but he's been doing a lot of moving and stuff. But please check in with him on all that. Wolfman of Mars, thank you for the music, and Kevin Spencer at inksplatters.com for the artwork. Also, want to give a shout out to Maintain, MAINTAINN, for keeping our site secure. You can check them out through the link on our site over at thescreamcast.com down there at the bottom. So please click that so they know that you're checking it out if you're interested in web security. Also, please continue to check out our pins. We have the Pumpkin Daddy that we are raising money for Dustin Pace's wife, Tiffany. We still have some left. We're going to start shipping those out very soon. So they are in, and we'll start shipping them out if you've ordered them. And I want to thank all of you for your patience while waiting for those and all that. So also check out our Patreon, patreon.com/... dang it. How did I do that? Scream_cast. Is that what I did? Dang it. I've been messing with the site trying to fix it, and I took down all of our social media links. So the Patreon link isn't even up there.
Good job, Sean.
Patreon.com/scream_cast. I know we've had a lot of people leaving, cause we haven't been doing our special, episode, and, that's warranted. It's fine. I get it. So, you know, if you love the show and you like what we do, feel free to be a patron. We're trying to get back around to the extra stuff. But a lot's been going on. Brad's been traveling. There's been a lot of bullshit going on. And we've just, have a lot. So, those of you who have stayed on as patrons, thank you so much. And we will be doing some more drawings very soon for all of our $5 and up patrons. So, with that said, thank you for listening. We'll talk to all of you guys next time. Bye-bye.
See ya.
Thank you. Bye.
Oh, don't tell me you're leaving. The party's just begun.
Has been your one-stop shop for all things geek for years. But there's a side to them many of you have never heard. The subscription side. Subscribe and listen to great podcasts like The Breakfast Pub, The Original Gentleman, and the Watch a Movie With Us series. Head on over to oneofus.net and don't forget your towel.